Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Line of Line Ministries. Welcome to our study. We're going through the letters of Paul, and we're addressing Paul's teaching in the letters as he goes through the various communities where he had gone and ministered among the Gentiles, telling them about the Messiah. Many of them had received salvation, but then other influences came in and started affecting these different communities. We're in the midst of the book of Galatians, and in particular, this is a group that Paul had shared the gospel with. They had accepted the Messiah. They believed in the Messiah. But there were other Jews out there in those communities, and when they heard that they were believing the God of Israel, they began to come over and influence them. And of course, the thing they wanted to put on the new Gentile believers was essentially what was developing as Judaism, and it was really the teaching of the Pharisees at that time. I might add that Judaism really did not come into its own until about 90 AD through the first rabbi that's credited with that is a man named Yochanan ben Zakkai. And he's the guy that canonized the Tanakh, the Old Testament, and it served as the core scriptures for all believers, even for the Messiah at that time. The New Testament had not really come into being. We were beginning to get some of the letters of Paul. We were beginning to get the written gospels that would then form the New Testament, but these were small documents that were kind of moving around. And the real core text that these new believers had was coming from the Law and the Prophets. Well, the Pharisees came in and they tried to present themselves as the experts on the Law and the Prophets. And they began to influence these new Gentile believers. Paul is now trying to correct some of that teaching that they were giving. Fundamentally, one of the things that they were trying to correct was the error concerning how does one get saved. Now, the Pharisees believed that you got saved by keeping the law, keeping the commandments of the law. You had to be circumcised to be saved. You had to keep the commandments, the Ten Commandments, to be saved, and so forth. Paul had come in and shared this gospel that was the original gospel that God preached to Abraham and how Abraham's faith was counted for righteousness. A promise was given to Abraham that in his seed, all the families of the earth would be blessed. Paul's out teaching all the other families, the other nations, and he's teaching the original gospel that God gave to Abraham. And it is that you begin first by believing the promise of God. Specifically, did God send his son to be our redemption? And if you believe that, that faith is counted for righteousness. Now, what do you do with that? Well, there's a lot of other important things that you need to know in this life. You need to know how to determine truth. You need to determine justice. You need to understand God's substitutionary system. How is it that you've been forgiven of your sins? How is it that you're no longer under a curse? How is it that you receive salvation? All of those things and all of those teachings were illustrated in the law. So Paul's out using Torah concepts and teaching provisions of the law so that they could understand it correctly. Of course, in the case of the Galatians, they had a lot of competition because the Pharisees had another version of teaching the law, and Paul is trying to overcome that for the Galatians. Now, we've been in Galatians here for a couple of programs, and I'm hoping this program will be able to complete the book of Galatians and so forth. Let me take you now to where we're at in Galatians. Let me take you to Galatians chapter 4, and he's going to do a review on who this people he's talking to. These were Gentiles. They were caught up in the Roman Greco world. And by the way, if you know anything about that world, they had many gods and mythology that we call today. But in that day, mythology was theology. And so he had to deal with all of these different kinds of things. And he's also having to contend with all of that teaching about how you have righteousness or appropriateness spiritually in a mix with what the Jews were doing. So Paul's got his hands full trying to help this people to come forward and follow the Messiah correctly. Genesis 4 and verse 8, he says this of them. However, at that time, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those by nature who are not gods. You followed a bunch of idols. They weren't gods at all, but you were following. You were caught up in them. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how is it that you turn back again to the weak and worthless elemental things to which you desire to be enslaved all over again? The Galatians had already begun to take the teaching that Paul had given and begin to mix it, with some of the stuff they had known before. And they thought that, hey, we'll make it even better. We'll take the best parts of what we learned over there and that with that God and that religion, and we'll mix it with the best parts here that we have with the Messiah and so forth. And Paul's saying, no, you can't do that. That's not how it works. You cannot mix things with God. God does not share his glory with any other God. He's a jealous God. He says, don't mix me with any of it. The history of Israel is one in which the tribes and several of the tribes would join together and they would start mixing things of the teaching of God and the commandments with other neighbors and their gods. You see it repeated again and again and again. The whole northern kingdom, the house of Israel that broke away from the house of Judah, the northern kingdom versus the southern kingdom. There's a very bold statement in there where the northern kingdom said, we believe in the God of Israel, but we're still going to bake cakes to the Queen of Heaven. They were mixing the religion of the peoples around them. And Israel has always had this problem. By the way, do not look upon them and say, oh, well, they were really dumb to do that. They shouldn't have done that. So we would never make a mistake like that. I would like to remind you that Christianity, modern day Christianity today, is filled with the mixing of other religions from other lands and ancient ones, not the least of which is December 25th. That goes way back into the ancients, into Greek theology. That was when the Greek king had his birthday and he demanded everybody worship his birthday, celebrate his birthday. And so when they decided, well, we want to observe the birthday of the Messiah, guess what date they decided to use? Well, the same one our king used to use. And that's how we got December 25th. Because Christianity decided to mix the teachings of the faith with the previous things they had done. This is what Paul's going to be specifically talking about. Verse 10, you observe days and months and seasons and years. I fear for you that perhaps I have labored over you in vain. See, the Galatians already were starting to shift into other elements of the religions that had been around them and so forth. Christianity, as particularly Catholicism and so forth, it's reeking with all of the previous pagan religions. It's reeking with the stuff. It's now the average Christian here's, I'm going to take American Christians, for example. We're so dumb, we have no idea where any of this came from. We just thought that, hey, what we're doing here, that must have been what the Apostle Paul and John and Yeshua used to do. You know, the Bible, hey, you know, this is the one that Paul handed to us and said, hey, this is the one I want you to follow. That's not how we got that. We got that through the history of many men and many generations. And along the way, not so good of things got mixed in along with it. And many believers have no idea that those things are a part of our observance and our practice. That's one of the reasons why it's crucial that we set aside what we think is right and let us go back and listen, what did the Lord say? Let's go back to the original instructions. When I was in the Navy, very quickly I learned there was a right way, a wrong way, and the Navy's way of doing things. And the Navy way didn't have anything to do with right or wrong. It was just the way we were going to do it. Well, the fact of the matter is Christianity and all the different denominations, they do exactly the same thing. They don't care what the right way or the wrong way is. They're just going to do it the way they do it. I'm suggesting to you that maybe you should break loose from that. Maybe you should go back and find out what the Lord said and do what He said there. Quite honestly, that's what the Messianic movement is all about. It's like what the prophecy says, that in the last days that God's people will turn back to Moses, will turn back to the original instruction. And this is where Paul's coming from. Paul's teaching the original instruction to the Gentiles in the midst of, he was competing with all kinds of other things trying to be mixed in. And so that's the reason why he wrote the letter. And some of this stuff is in the form of correction. Some of it is in the form of explanation. And I'm trying to come to you as my fellow brethren. I'm trying to show you where Paul's coming from. He's not coming from the position of teaching you what you think to be Christianity, and he's backing you up. That is, if you're just picking and choosing a couple of key verses, he says, and trying to self-justify. I'm not here to self-justify. I'm here to tell you what he really was teaching and what was the basis of his teaching. So let's move on now to chapter 4 a little bit further, and he's going to do a classic, what I call Hebrew way of teaching. And he's still addressing the subject of, let's follow Abraham and his example, as opposed to the example of the law that came later that has been twisted by the Pharisees. Verse 21, tell me, who do you want, who want to be under the law? Do you not listen to the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a bondwoman and one by a free woman. But the son by the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and the son, the free woman, through the promise. This is allegorically speaking, for these two women are two covenants. One is proceeding from Mount Sinai, bearing children who are to be slaves. She is Hagar. Now this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is a slavery with her children. But Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother. For it is written, rejoice, barren woman who does not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor. For more numerous are the children of the desolate than that of the one who has a husband. And you, brethren, like Isaac, are children of promise. But as for that time, he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit. So it is now also, but what does the Scripture say? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be an heir with the son of the free woman. Interesting allegory. This is a very typical way that many times that a preacher of the Torah and of the law will try to express and teach a point. So Paul has decided to say, remember the story about how Abraham had been promised a son? Well, the first son that he got was through Hagar, the bondwoman, and that was Ishmael. And Abraham loved Ishmael. He was his firstborn son through Hagar. But it wasn't the son that God had promised to Abraham. God had promised a son through Sarah. You remember God had come at the oaks of Mamre and had said, Sarah will bear a child. It wasn't Hagar would bear a child, it would be Sarah would bear a child. So the promise of God was the son Isaac. It wasn't the son Ishmael. And what he's doing is he's taking the example of that Abraham had two sons. One is through the bondwoman, the other is through the free woman. And he's trying to illustrate, yeah, they're sons of Abraham, but they're not necessarily what God wants you to be doing. Is the law part of God? Yes. But is the law, can it be used to be a replacement for the promise that God made to Abraham? No, it can't. The promise of God takes precedence. Oh, by the way, the promise of God includes the Messiah. And the Messiah and faith in him takes precedence even over the law. Now, the law is good. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you get the law in front of the Messiah, you got a problem. If you ignore the law and believe in the Messiah, you got another problem. If you have the law and you ignore the Messiah, you got a heck of a problem. And he's trying to sort all that out and trying to get the Galatians to understand, do not leave your faith in Messiah. Stay strict to it. Make that the pinnacle of your faith. The law has its proper place, but don't put it in a place that it's not supposed to be. And so he uses this allegory, for it as well. Let me give you another example of what Paul did. Let's talk about America versus Israel. Okay, and let me just ask you something real simple. Did the Bible come forth from America, or did it come forth from Israel? Well, I think most of you are going to argue and say, well, no, it came from Israel, and I would agree with you. But did you know, interestingly enough, the American Bible Society in the life of the United States of America has helped to get the Bible out to the world like nobody has ever done it before? There are a lot of people who would answer the question and say, where did the Bible come from? Did it come from Israel? Did it come from America? There's a lot of people who would say, hey, in our nation, it came from America. They're the ones that printed all the Bibles. Those are the guys that dedicated themselves to get the Word of God out to all the nations of the world. The American Bible Society in this modern world is the one responsible for the Bible going out to the world. Now, I'm talking about the practical aspects of how the Bible has gone out to the world. I'm not talking about how it originates. But if we're going to talk about how it originates, how the Bible really came to us, came through Israel. Came through the patriarchs, came through the Moses and the prophets. That's where the Bible really came from. Do you see how, there's a slight difference there? I'm just trying to make a point about a particular aspect, and Paul is doing the same thing here. By the way, I have actually seen teachers take this allegory and try to suggest, see, Paul was teaching, we're doing away with the law. Utterly ridiculous. You don't make profound doctrinal statements based off of an allegory. Allegories are simply to illustrate a point that is being made. Galatians chapter 5, I want to take you to verse 22. He says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. One of the things that the law doesn't do, the law doesn't tell you every good thing you should do because it's not putting every good thing in the imperative. There are certain good things that is in the imperative, certain things that God says, I want you definitely to do that good thing, and so he gives us a commandment. But on these items that I mentioned to you in the list, the spirit of love, joy, peace, practice, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, there is no law. Because the law doesn't have to give a positive commandment for those. By the way, let me offer one qualification to this list, and that is the greatest commandment is for you to love God. The second greatest is for you to love your neighbor. So you could say there is a law with regard to that. But what is Paul trying to do? He's trying to illustrate something for you, that when you follow the Spirit of God, when you're going to do natural things that the law is in perfect agreement with. The law is not set up to be opposed to you walking the faith. Let me illustrate it to you this way. I get in my vehicle when I leave here, and I'm going to travel to my house. I'm going to go one block down here to this one intersection. There's a stop sign down there. And you know what? I'm going to stop at that stop sign. That stop sign, it does not prohibit me from getting to my home, but that stop sign helps to guarantee that I will get home safely. And so I stop at the stop sign. Now, how about you? If you don't see any cars coming left or right and there's nobody else in the intersection, do you go ahead and stop at the stop sign? Because, as you drive up on, you can kind of see what's going on. Do you stop at the stop sign even though no one is there, knowing full well the purpose of the stop sign? is to keep you from entering an intersection, having an accident, and vice versa? Yeah, I do. Why do I do that? Well, one, I've learned that this is good practice. This is a good thing for me to do because there might be moments when I'm caught up in something else, and it's just a good practice, a good habit that I need to follow. I've also discovered another reason. Sometimes you'll come up there and you don't see nobody, but there's some cop car sitting off over that can see the intersection, but you can't see them. And if you blow through that stop sign, he'll light up the lights, pull you over, and you'll get to pay for a ticket. I've learned that it's good to obey the law. That way I won't get caught and I won't be fined, you know, for that. Speed limits, the same thing. The other traffic laws, none of it keeps me from doing what I want. All it does is enable me to get there safely and securely. And I don't suffer the penalty of the law because I've been obedient. The same thing is true about how you're supposed to walk in the Spirit before the Lord. Certain things that we do automatically, and even though the law doesn't force us to do it or prohibit us from doing it, we continue to do these good things. And the point being is the law was simply an enabler, a thing that helped us to learn to walk before God properly and safely. That was what it was for. And that's what Paul is trying to explain here. He goes on to further say, verse 24, "Now those who belong to the Messiah have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. And if we live by the Spirit, then let us walk by the Spirit. Let us not become boastful, challenging one another and envying one another." Now we're talking about how to get along with one another well, how to do this. Let's go in the spirit of the law. We know the intention of the law. It's going to help us. Let's follow along with it. Let's not be opposed to it. Let's be in cooperation with God. And it's the same way about how you, when you walk, do you walk on the guy's grass or do you walk on the sidewalk? You know, it's better to walk on the sidewalk. And the law explains a whole lot of things about the world and about what God's preference and so forth. Why don't we follow his set of instructions? I think it'd go better for us if we do that. In fact, God makes all kinds of promises that if we'll meditate on that and we'll follow those instructions and we'll teach those instructions, God will grant us good success and cause our way to be prosperous. That sounds like some pretty good reasons to do it. That's the proper way to use the law. That's the proper context of the law, not as a substitute for the Messiah, for salvation, or anything having to do with that. Chapter 6, verse 1 says, "Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one of the spirit of gentleness, each one according to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and therefore fulfill the law of the Messiah." Wow, that is a very interesting verse. You know what I've heard a lot of Christian teachers do with that? They say the fulfilling the law of the Messiah is not the same thing as the law of Moses. You got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. The law of Moses that was given to us at Mount Sinai with God speaking with his own voice, shaking the ground, transforming a mob of people into a nation to obey him, and the Messiah who is the fulfillment of that, the promise that came from the law. You think the Messiah came to do something different than what God had been doing to begin with? By the way, let me just pose this question to you as a fellow believer. Is the Messiah God? Let me go ahead and answer for you. Yes. Was God at Mount Sinai? Yes. Was the Messiah God at Mount Sinai? Yes. Did the Messiah speak those commandments to the people? Yes, he did. Did you know that at Mount Sinai, God said, "If you love me, keep my commandments"? Did you know the Messiah, when he came in the flesh of men, he said exactly the same words? Did you know that the Messiah taught what the law says? His disciples taught what the law said. Where do we get the idea that the law of Christ that's given here in verse 2 of chapter 6 of Galatians is somehow something different? Well, I think the reason why they do that is because they're trying to say all this wonderful, oozy, goozy stuff up here, you know, like love, joy, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, is somehow different from the law. No, it's not. Obeying the law is what produces all these good things, all these blessings, all of this wonderful stuff that we all want. By obeying the Lord, that's what happens. Now, to be successful in obeying the Lord completely, it's based on the faith of the Messiah, the promise of God that was given to us. And therefore, when we believe in the Messiah and we obey the commandments and we enjoy all these things, we have fulfilled the law that the Messiah gave to us, the one he gave to us back at Mount Sinai. That's what he's talking about here. Chapter 6, verse 13, I want to mention this one verse. For those who are circumcised do not even keep the law themselves, but they desire to have you circumcised so that they may boast in your flesh. You know, as you know, the Pharisee sect, they were all circumcised. And one of the big things that we're trying to tell the Gentile Christians, oh, you need to get circumcised. You see, you're not saved unless you get circumcised. And Paul's trying to say, you know why those guys are saying that to you? They're saying that so that they can boast to one another that they got you to do that. They're not trying to help you. They're not following the provisions of what God taught. They're not trying to increase your faith in the Messiah. They're doing their own thing, and they're trying to bring credit to themselves and pat themselves on the back. And so Paul's trying to tell the Galatians, please don't participate with that, with those men. We have a lot of folks, I hate to say this, a lot of folks that go out and preach the gospel and teach and so forth, and they have similar motivations, folks. They're trying to increase the numbers. They're trying to increase. In the Bible, Paul talks about them. They're called gainsayers. And there's a lot of people who do that and try to take the young and the naive and those that are still not instructed yet fully and try to lay stuff on them and get them to conform instead of telling you about you need to build your relationship with the Messiah and have faith in him and then learn to obey what he says. That's the basic instruction for it. All right, we have completed the book of Galatians. I hope and trust that you benefited from that. Let's now shift gears, and we're going to go to the book of Ephesians. And Ephesians is, again, another group that was in Asia Minor, and they were being influenced, again, also by some Jews who were of the Pharisaic tradition, trying to be told how they need to do things. And circumcision was at the forefront. Circumcision is one of the things that Jews put as a minimum requirement for you to be part of their group. So we were telling all the Gentiles, oh, you got to get circumcised and so forth for it. Let me take you to Ephesians chapter 2. Paul begins with his greetings in chapter 1, but let me take you to chapter 2 where he begins to speak to the Ephesians. Therefore, remember that formerly, I'm reading from verse 11. Therefore, remember that formerly you, the Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by the so-called circumcision, which is performed in the flesh by human hands, remember that you were at times separate from the Messiah, excluded from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in the Messiah Yeshua, you who were formerly far off have been brought near by the blood of the Messiah. Let's hold and stop for a moment. The logic of what Paul just said is incredible. Listen to it again. You see, you were a Gentile and you were completely separated. You were completely separated from everything that God had was doing with Israel. You had no knowledge of the covenants that God had made before, the promises that God had made before. You literally had no hope, and you were in the world without God. You existed, but you had no part of what God was really doing in the world through Israel. But then he says, but now, as a result of the Messiah, whom was formerly very far off to you, having been brought to you, and the Messiah's now sacrifices now being afforded to you, you have now become part of what God has been doing. Let me explain that. That as a result of you receiving the Messiah, you now get to be a part of all of the previous covenants that God made. You get to be part of the covenant God made with Adam, with Noah, with Abraham, with Moses and the children of Israel, with King David, and also with the Messiah when he gave the new covenant. You get to be a part of all those covenants. How come you're being taught that you only have one covenant and not the others? Because it's air. Paul is saying you get to be part of all of it now. You Gentiles, you're not just new covenant. You get to be part of all of the covenants and all the promises. In fact, you get to be part of the commonwealth of Israel. By the way, the name of the kingdom is Israel. You're part of the kingdom. You're part of Israel. Oh, well, I thought I was a Gentile. Yeah, you were, but now you're the seed of Abraham. Now you've been grafted in. Now you are part of Israel. You're part of the covenants. You're part of the remnant that God has been promising. You're one of the descendants of Abraham. You've been grafted in. You've been adopted. You've been elected by the Father. That's what he's saying to them. Where in the world do we get the idea that when you become a believer in the Messiah, that you don't have any part of this which you call the Old Testament or the covenants that God made with Moses and the children of Israel? That the temple system is not part of your life anymore. That all those things that God did back there, that doesn't apply to you anymore. You just have the Messiah and you have the church and so forth. Where'd you get that teaching? Not from Paul. Paul is teaching the opposite of that. Now, I thought all my Christian brethren wanted to stick with Paul. Well, I wish they would. I wish they would sit down here and look at what Paul taught. Because Paul said that if you're a Gentile and you've come to faith in the Messiah, you are part of what you were separated from. You have now been fully joined into everything that God has been doing with mankind and the saints before, including the fathers, including the law, including the prophets, including the commonwealth of Israel, including the king of Israel. He's your king now. And you're part of his kingdom. And that is his kingdom. He said all of that because there was something that had happened that the Pharisees and Sadducees had done in Jerusalem at the temple. See, when I told you that they decided to do things differently than what Moses taught, one of the biggest things they did was they said, we don't want the Gentiles here. Now, when Moses gave the commandments, he said, this commandment is for the native born, for the alien and sojourner who may be with you. Every major commandment, it was given in that way. It was given that everybody that believes in the God of Israel, this commandment applies to them. Yet, the Pharisees and Sadducees, they came along and said, no, 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 no. Let's just have the commandments for us Jews. And these poor Gentiles, we'll give them a subset of them. In fact, they're referred to as the Noahide laws. They came up with a definition of seven laws from what we learned from Noah. And so they have the Noahide laws, but they don't follow the Torah. They don't follow the law of Moses. They don't follow the same commandments we do. And when it came to the temple system, we said, we don't want them coming into the temple. So you know what they did in Jerusalem? They built a dividing wall. They built a what's called a middle wall of partition. outside of the temple, they put another wall on the outside and they posted signs on there, and it said, no Gentile is permitted to go past this point, subject to death. And the Gentiles, who used to be able to in the tabernacle, and when the temple was first built by King Solomon, they used to be able to walk into the temple and present their sacrifices to the priest directly and observe the sacrifice being put on the altar, and they would come and they would pray to God and they would worship God just like anybody else. But when we got the second temple and we came back from Babylon, there was a big dispute amongst the priesthood at that time. They decided to come up with this new system. So they built a dividing wall. So essentially what Paul is trying to address here is, guys, that dividing wall was not set up by God. You're not supposed to be divided and separate from Israel. You're supposed to be part of Israel. Now let me take you to, let me conclude with verse 13, chapter 2. But now in the Messiah, you who formerly were far off have been brought near by the blood of the Messiah. For he himself is our peace, who made both groups one and broke down the barrier of the dividing wall. That the Messiah has broken through that wall and says, if you're a Gentile and you believe in me, you get to walk right up to the altar just like any one of the sons of Israel. You get to make your sacrifice just like them. You get to come and worship me in the same way as anyone else in Israel is able to do so. And he says, by abolishing in his flesh the enmity, which is the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so that in himself he might make the two one new man, thus establishing peace. Those Pharisaic priests and teachers basically spoke and said, this is the law. You Gentiles, if you go any further than this, you're subject to death. And God said, watch this. I'm going to break down the commandments of men. I'm going to tear those down. We're going to go back to the commandments of God. And the commandments of God are that every person is welcome to come and worship the God of Israel. That's what the law actually teaches. That's maybe not what you've been taught through church leadership, but that's what happened. And as a result of what the Messiah has done, when you suddenly realize, hey, I'm not a Gentile anymore. I'm actually a son of Abraham. I'm a Hebrew. I may not be a Jew, but I'm a Hebrew. And I am welcome as the Commonwealth of Israel and fellow citizen in the kingdom, just like all the rest of them. And, oh, by the way, you have become like a new person. You're no longer a Gentile. I have a lot of news for you folks. Today, in the modern Messianic movement, it's really an identity movement. People are suddenly discovering who they really are in the Lord. They're not Gentiles who decided to become Baptists and Christians. If you've turned to the Messiah and believe in the Messiah, then you become part of Israel. You've become part of the remnant of Israel. You've become a descendant of Abraham. You are an heir to all the promises that God made. You are an heir to all the covenants that God made. All of them. You get to have them just as much as I do, or any other believer gets to have. All right, that has now brought us into Ephesians chapter 2. In our next program, we're going to continue on telling you things that Paul taught in the book of Ephesians. Join me in the next program as we continue with the letters of Paul. Shalom to all of you.